Hi, everybody. Welcome again to another episode of the Shop Notes Podcast. I'm your host, Phil, along with John and Logan today. It's episode number 188. In today's episode, we're going to discuss some oddball clamps. The fallout of a sawmilling experience weekend, our continued fascination with Sprecher's root beer and cheese, and so much more. You want a glue that you can trust, and fortunately, Titebond has the glue you need to get the job done with confidence. From interior glues with strong initial tack and short clamp time, to exterior glues with exceptional strength and water resistance, look to Titebond, the right glue for your next project. For more information, visit TightBond.com. When we last were with our intrepid crew, one of them was getting ready for a sawmilling experience. And now we are after that event.
How was it,
So how
John?
Did that go? It was John.
That doesn't sound like me at all.
Yeah.
Good. So one of our listeners came down from the great state of Wisconsin, and took tour of the shop on Friday, and then we did lunch at the Cheese Bar, which of course is my favorite lunch spot in Des Moines. You fight me on that if you want. And then Saturday, Bob came out here and we messed around with some of his planes. And then we broke out the sawmill, got it out of the shop, and it was funny. You could tell it was the first time I had the sawmill out this year, because I started pulling it out. I'm like, huh, where's my crank handle to raise and lower the head? Like, there's just a shaft sticking out, and I'm like, I kind of remember pulling this thing off, but I kind of don't. And so we're kind of looking around for it. Bob's like, what color is it? I'm like, I think it's orange. I'm like, no, it's silver with a black handle. I was like, screw it. I'm just going to grab channel locks, and we're just going to rotate it with handles.
All right.
I found it, and we put it on. And went to fill up my water and remembered last time I was out running it, I dropped the plug out of the bottom of my water container. So, like, there was a hole, open hole in the bottom. So I'm like, well, I got a screw and some Teflon tape. So we made a plug, shoved it in there. I was like, yeah, this is real life sawmilling. You just kind of make it work. You go full Alaskan on it. And yeah, it was great. We pulled a walnut log off of my trailer, and we cut it in twain. It was 14 foot long. I was like, I'm gonna send all this lumber back with Bob. So we cut it to 7 1/4 feet a piece, and we cut it. Yeah, and it was awesome. Beautiful, right. Beautiful walnut log. So, yeah, it was fun. So Bob got to see a little bit of the sawmilling works, kind of how I position stuff, how it gets cut, let Bob run the mill, which was really cool. I just stood off to the side and just was like, occasionally grab a board, like, this is easy, man. Like, it's the actual pushing and work. That sucks. It doesn't suck, but, you know.
Yeah. So was there any kind of a high points or something that he was looking for specifically? Or, you know, like sometimes you do a presentation or a class and you have an idea of where it goes, but then because of the audience, it kind of drifts with a special emphasis or anything?
No, I don't think so. I think it was more of, you know, just hanging out and kind of getting some hands on with some of the stuff, you know, plane restoration and sawmilling and stuff. So, yeah.
Okay.
No, it was awesome. I felt bad because we had friends coming in from out of town. So it's like, it had to be done at 5, 4:35, something like that. And then they were here all Sunday as well. So it's like, well, I wish I would have known that or realized that Bob was staying the entire weekend, because then I would have like blocked my entire weekend. But no, I think it was good. I think he enjoyed it. We got loaded up on freaking Wisconsin cheese and root beer and beer, which was awesome. So
right.
Sprecher's maple, one of my favorites.
Right. And Sprecher's has a blonde which I did not know about.
Yeah, like a barrel-aged blonde root beer. Have you tried one of them yet?
I have not.
Okay.
No, so I'm going to have to...
two left in there. It says like 25% or 50% brown sugar.
Yeah.
And then the remainder is cane sugar.
Yeah.
But it's aged in barrels. You know, I don't taste any barrel aging on it, but it is delicious. Bailey said when she tried the one I had yesterday, she's like, I kind of get like a cream soda vibe out of it, and it does a little bit. And I don't know if it's just like the association with the color.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah.
What kind of notes are you looking for barrel aged that you'd be able to pick out?
I think, so it depends on if it's like, so like if you get a barrel aged beer, usually it's barrel aged in bourbon barrels. So there's definitely a bourbon flavor.
Right.
And I don't know that that's what they were going for off that, but I feel like if you are barrel aging something, it's going to be in a white oak barrel. You should get a little bit of oakiness on it. Right.
Okay.
Like kind of that flavor you get as you're milling oak lumber.
Right.
I'm kind of expecting some of that. Yeah, that
little white oak.
Oh, that's white oak. Little white oak dust. Yeah. I'm expecting that, and I didn't get any of that. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, that's fair.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, and then the beer was, there was a Sprecher's made beer, which makes sense, but also I've only encountered Sprecher's through their root beer and other novelty sodas.
Yep. So we will. That's in the fridge, right? So we are going
that's in
to
the fridge.
Give that a go. I know.
Yeah.
Dylan and myself are beer drinkers. John will occasionally have a beer.
Yeah.
Phil, you're not a very big beer drinker.
No,
but
I have
Sprecher,
on occasion.
So you kind of gotta.
I feel like
yeah.
I'm going to have to try. Yeah.
Yeah.
He also left New Glarus Brewing Spotted Cow.
Yep.
So, which my connection with New Glarus is. One side of my people are from Switzerland, and New Glarus, Wisconsin is actually a Swiss enclave. So pretty interesting there.
Interesting. So, and maybe the best thing was all the cheese.
Yes.
Yeah.
There was lots of cheese.
Yes.
Yeah, we cracked open, what was it, the 15-year aged cheddar?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. It's pretty sharp.
Yeah. It was, not too sharp.
No, it was really good. There was a maple bacon cheddar as well, which I thought was really good and had unexpected onion notes in it.
Well, that one wasn't, I think that was just bacon and cheddar, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, just bacon
and
cheddar.
That was bacon and cheddar, but it had onions and what else?
Pickles.
Pickles. Yeah. Yes. Yes, which is, so it's like a cheeseburger cheese.
Yeah, it's like a bacon cheeseburger.
Yeah.
But just in the cheese.
Just in the cheese.
So you just slice that and put it on a cheeseburger.
Yes. But there is a maple cheese in there, I think.
Right. I think that's where I was.
Is it a maple bourbon cheese?
Possibly.
Maybe. So there's lots of cheese. Oh, yeah. But to be fair, we are all cheese connoisseurs, right? Like in the studio, like when we cracked those open yesterday when we were filming, everybody was dipping their finger in the cheese, if you know what I mean.
So, what do you mean?
I don't know. My wife asks me this all the time. Yeah, she's like, "No, I don't know what you mean by that. Can you explain further?" Yeah. And I don't want to. It's like,
nope, because it's the more words I add, just the worse it gets.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So in last week's podcast, John wasn't here for that, but we had talked about on the front end of it is, would this be something that other people would be interested in doing as a sawmill weekend? And you heard from several people, right?
I heard from a lot of people saying, if you're doing a sawmilling weekend, sign us up. So logistically, there's some questions there. Like,
right. How many people at a time can you do?
Oh, we can have as many people as we want. It's like, where we got parking? And it's like, what are we doing is the question. It's like, to me, all of us kind of as educators, like we want it to be educational. Like we want people to come and see it, experience it, learn and understand from it. Right.
Right.
But I also think it would be cool if people come and we did this as a, you know, weekend sawmilling retreat. You know, we look at different types of sawmilling. You know, I can get the chainsaw mill out. We can do a big log. But then also do, like, the bandsaw mill. You know, everybody kind of gets to run the mill. I'd love to send people home with the lumber that they cut. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like, hey, come learn sawmilling for a weekend, and you're going to go home with, you know, 100 board feet of lumber. I think that would be super cool. It's going to be green, so people are going to get the experience of drying it themselves and sealing it and stickering it and doing all that stuff. Like, I think that'd be cool. Now, obviously, sorry, y'all, I ain't giving my logs away for free. So, you know, clearly we'd have to charge something for it, you know, for like a weekend class or whatever. We would do our internal marketing stuff, whatever. But I think it'd be interesting, and I heard from a lot of people say, heck yeah. Now, do people just want to come and sawmill for the weekend and be basically free labor for me? Yeah, let's do that too. Like, you sign up for one of the two weekends. You either sign up for the free weekend when you get no wood, you're just labor, or you sign up for the weekend where you bring home lumber. So I don't know.
It's the Tom Sawyer sawmilling weekend.
Yes,
that's
right.
Exactly what it is.
Yep. So, yes, I don't know. I think, Phil, you kind of made the comment like off the cuff, but it seems to have gotten legs. So we might see where it goes.
I think it would be kind of cool. John, you've been kind of free labor for Logan on a couple of videos for sawing and for the TV show episode that we did. If you were to, knowing what you know, what would you look for in a sawmilling weekend class?
Well, I don't know. Is there going to be beer and cheese there?
Yeah, maybe. Clearly.
Maybe. That would be like the evening of the first night is just like beer and cheese.
Yep.
No, yeah, it's not too bad. It's actually pretty – it's more educational than work. Of course, I wasn't doing this in the middle of summer.
Well, and that's the other mostly, thing. It's like, when do you do it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. August.
Getting the logs up and down are the main things, and the sawmill does most of the work. So
yeah, well, and if I'm doing it, you know, if we're doing that here in the shop, you know, you got a tractor. Like I'm not lifting logs if I don't have to.
Yeah,
but no, it would be. I think it would be cool. We sawmill in the summer kind of sucks. Because it's sweaty, and when you're sweaty and when you're wet, sawdust really likes to stick to you, and then it gets really itchy. But that's part of the experience, right?
Right.
Yep. Like, it's like going to scout camp. Part of the experience is using the latrine when there's mosquitoes all over.
It builds character.
It does. It builds something, all right.
So, but definitely shoulder seasons. So
yes,
September
spring.
And October, even late August, I think is decent enough. And and then spring. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we'll put it on the list. We were talking to Logan and I were messaging with our new supervisor, manager, Rob Yeagid.
Vice president of content, I believe is his name.
Yes.
Senior vice president of content.
I was trying to decide if it's content or if he's just senior vice president content.
Yeah. Could be.
So he seemed excited about it, so we'll have to see where this goes.
He's a content nerd like we are though, so.
Yeah. And in kind of a weird, this feels like something you could do that would be totally clickbait. Like, try this one weird trick if you mill your own lumber. But at home, we were cleaning out the basement and came across a bunch of candles that we had that we weren't going to burn anymore. And I brought some in here because occasionally when we're filming, we'll burn a couple of candles or whatever. And a couple of people on the crew have candles. But you, Logan, were very interested in the partially burned candles. Yeah. For a very odd reason.
Can I go get my odd reason real quick?
Yes.
Okay, hold on.
Do.
I have it.
Little word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Tightbond. You want a glue that you can trust, and fortunately, Tightbond has the glue you need to get the job done with confidence. From interior glues with strong initial tack and short clamp time to exterior glues with exceptional strength and water resistance, look to Tightbond, the right glue for your next project. For more information, visit tightbond.com.
Okay, so my crock pot is out. My crock pot's out in the cold storage side, but this is what I do with them. So this, well, you can see there were some cracks on there
okay.
that I also sealed. Mm-hmm. So when my grandma passed away, probably 5 years ago, I ended up with a big tote of her half-used candles. Okay, I don't know why you don't just throw them away when you're done with them. But, like, she had all these half-used candles. Phil, your wife also had some half-used candles.
Right.
And what I started doing was sealing the ends of turning blanks, like so, with the wax. Now, when you go buy a turning blank in the store, you get this paraffin wax-dipped blank. So it's just covered in wax, and it's pure paraffin. Paraffin's not what I'd call super expensive. Like, I think you can buy like a 10-pound block of paraffin for, you know, $15. And 10 pounds of wax will go a long ways.
Right.
But I'm like, well, I'm gonna melt these down and use these to seal my turning blanks. So that's what I do. So like Actually, some of the first stuff I sealed with this wax was, Phil, when we took down that maple tree at your house, I took couple sections that had some, like, figure in them. And you used some for some stuff, too.
Yeah.
And I ended up sealing them. So I bought a crock pot, probably at Goodwill or, like, Salvation Army or something, for, you know, $3 or $4. And I just started melting wax in it. So right now, it's this old, nasty crock pot. That's 3/4 full of wax. You turn it on high. It takes like an hour to melt all of the wax. And then you can, if your blanks are small enough, you can just dip them in there. And I discovered, though, that you have to dip the end grain. And if it's a wet piece of wood, like freshly sawn, you have to dip the end grain, let it sit in there for, I don't know, 15, 20 seconds, pull it out, and then dip it again and let it sit for another 15 or 20 seconds. Because I think the heat flashes off some of the moisture, so okay. you get separation. This one here is actually pretty good, but it's actually starting to, like, peel. Like, right here, I can get my finger underneath that wax and kind of start peeling it off.
Right, like a sunburn.
Like a sunburn, that's right. And... Yeah, but I'm like, you know, when I see a big thing of candles that Becky's going through, and she's like, I don't want this one. I'm like, throw them this way, because I'll use that wax to seal stuff. And it smells like my grandma's house, because it just smells like every candle in Bed Bath & Beyond lit at once.
Right.
Now, to be completely fair, I do have end grain sealer. Like, I have 5-gallon buckets full of Anchor Seal. I actually have a backpack sprayer that I put Anchor Seal in to seal the ends of logs. So, like, if we're doing a big logging job and we get a bunch of logs, I'll cut all the ends and just sit there and spray them with a backpack sprayer. It's really messy, though. It's, like, really messy. Just for a couple of little turning blanks, it's like trying to paint on a thin Elmer's glue. It's just messy. Mm. This is so much easier, especially if I know I'm cutting a bunch of blanks, I'll just get it done. Yeah, it works out. It works out great.
All right, so, that's cool.
Yeah,
it was just kind of funny going into the kitchen this morning and having that collected aroma of 12 different candles all at once. It's very floral, perfumey, chemical, all in there.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah. And I know somebody will ask that, like, the color of the wax doesn't seem to transfer to the wood at all. So, like, I had wondered that because the first blanks I said that were maple and they're white.
Yeah.
The color does not leach in at all.
Okay.
So I was worried about that.
Sure.
But yeah. Yep.
Everybody doing their part. That's, mm-hmm. I just thought it was kind of cool. I mean, I've seen, you know, you go to, like a hardwood lumber dealer and sometimes you'll find like small exotics where they're pretty much just coated in wax too. Kind of like some tropical vegetables, you know, when they come and it's just got the wax coating on it. But
yeah. And if you do pick up a blank, and this is something that not a lot of people understand, if you pick up a blank and it is completely wax sealed, it will never dry. It will be wet forever.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like the water does not permeate through the wax and dry out. Mm-hmm. If just the end grain is sealed, then a lot of times it will dry out. It'll dry out slowly.
Yeah.
So like this walnut blank here, this was a piece of a walnut root ball. This was actually the tap root. I sealed the ends and you can still see, for those of you watching, you see that big crack on it? So it is still drying out and cracking on the sides. So I'm going to need to turn this sometime sooner rather than later.
Okay.
So the purpose is just to seal the end grain so moisture doesn't escape quickly and then you get the cracking on the ends.
Yeah,
you want it to escape from the side slowly, but not from the end because it'll go too quick.
Bingo. And the reason that is cracking on that face is because that's the face where there's a lot of figure. So it's a lot of end grain coming through. So that's why that side is cracking. The sides that have all side grain and no end grain, not a single crack on them.
Okay.
So unfortunately, it's the pretty side that's starting to crack.
There you go. Well, you can just epoxy fill it or something. So is it going to be a bowl then? Or
it's going to be a hollow form, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it'll be some form of like vase, maybe, if I'm feeling fancy that day. Mm-hmm. We did one out of them. My buddy Greg did one. And this was the second blank that we had. And I was like, I'll just seal it. I don't have time to get to it. Time's slipping away slowly.
Yep.
So when you're working with root material or root balls like that, does your tools dull quicker noticeably or not necessarily?
No. I don't think so. Jared, our friend that had this root ball, he did a pretty good job of, he picked up this root ball with a skid loader and dropped it about 70 times and it shook a lot of rocks and dirt out of it. Mm-hmm. Then he took it to the car wash. If you're a local car wash owner in Des Moines, he did not do this, but he took it to a car wash and pressure washed it. And it was pretty big. And so he got most of the dirt off that way, but we did still, when we were chainsawing it into blanks, we did still find pockets of like, not mud, but like packed in dirt inside of it. So there's always a potential,
right?
But no, like the wood itself, unless I hit something, I don't notice it being any different.
Okay. So
I did turn, my big shield that I have in the house hanging in the stairwell, that's a buckeye burl. And that was kind of like a root burl. So it was like one of them that was like kind of half hidden in the dirt, you know? And I bought that pre-cut. It was cut into a big round, you know? And I did find when I was turning that, we did find like limestone embedded inside of it. So like you'd be cutting it all of a sudden, you'd see a spark fly around. You're like, well, I hit something. And you'd stop and there'd be a piece of like what looks like gravel sticking out of a little void in the root. So, you know. Comes with the territory though.
Yep. All right. So to continue on the semi-related sawmilling theme and also something that we brought up a little while ago, probably last year on the podcast, is we're working on a project for the TV show that uses red oak. Mm-hmm. And typically red oak is not well executed, to be charitable. But you had an adventure, Logan, in sawing a red oak tree, and then John converted one of those boards into project parts today. So how was that, John, in working with that particular board?
I don't think it was any worse than, you know, most of the stuff Logan brings in.
I can't argue with you either.
Because you brought walnut in yesterday, and that, like, looked really good. It's just like you bring in these big slabs, and there's usually a lot of cracks and checking down the center where the, you know, the pith of the tree is, and that's natural. And they're all grayed and weathered. And I mean, you'd look at this board outside and be, oh, this isn't going to be like a good, you know, piece of furniture or whatever. You bring it in, you know, you clean that all, get, you know, rid of the cracks and the checking. You get through the surface patina and weathering, and it's like something you would pick up at any, you know, lumber store that's been milled and looks great, and you just kind of cut around the knots and the defects. And so it's like we've mentioned before, it's always satisfying, that the enjoyment of the discovery of, you know, getting the wood from the tree. So
I like one of you guys said it earlier today, you field dressed it.
Yep.
So it was like field dressing a deer. You get rid of all the stuff you don't want.
Innards and gristle in the garbage. But
yeah. I meant to tell you. Did you see that the end of that log had a tag on it?
Yeah, I found that.
Did you? Good. You know, I was like, oh crap, I forgot. Yeah. So, if any conservation officer finds it. That was definitely one of the. That was probably the third or fourth log I went and milled somewhere. Like the free logs I pick up. My first one was doing a hickory with the sawmill. I probably did an ash with one of my tree guys. And then this one. And I went and did this one by myself. And I was telling Phil. I remember this lady. It was miserable. It was in some lady's backyard. She had this red oak tree taken down. And she had somebody come out and cut it up for firewood, but he didn't want to cut up the trunk because it was too big or heavy or whatever. So I got back there with the sawmill, and it was a very sketchy, like, getting into that backyard with the – that would have been with my Ram at the time, my Ram and my sawmill. And the sawmill was shorter at the time. And just the grade that this thing was on. Like, I think when I put my ramps on to roll the log onto the mill, the ramps were pretty much horizontal to the ground. You know, it was like – it was one of those, like, the log just rolled straight onto the mill and didn't go up at all because of how big a grade this was on. It was miserable. And those were so heavy when they were wet. I was sweating my butt off, probably thinking this was the dumbest thing I've ever done. And now I did it all for this moment so Phil could turn that log into a shelf designed by John, right?
Yep.
So, yeah. So...
I was just saying, I always think it's like you just brought in one board. It's not a very big shelf project, but it's like, oh, how am I going to get all the parts from this? But it's like 2 inches thick, and you're playing it all down and resaw it, and you're like, I got enough for two shelves here.
Yeah. And it's pretty to be fair, I kept that board because that was the nicest one out of all of them because it's purely quarter sawn. It had the crack right down the center from the heart. It had a lot of fleck figure in it, which was really cool in red oak, you know. And I had sold a few of those. I told Phil I had sold a few of those boards. I think I sold them for like $200 a piece. Like I sold two of them. Not the course. That was the private reserve.
That's
going to
be a little bit more. Yeah, that's going to you charge that back. You know.
Yeah, that's right.
That's double.
Yep. So, no, I always. I mean, if I'm selling somebody a log or pieces of a log, you know, like a through and through, or you know. Whatever. Most of the time, they don't want the centerpiece because it has the crack down it, right? Even though most of the time that quarter sawn figure on oaks, on walnut, it's just really straight, as is with cherry. But I still really like that. Like, I like having that really straight grain. I'm completely cool with people not wanting to buy the center cut because That's what I want. Like, that's the private reserve collection
that goes in the back.
That's
the prime.
Yeah.
Choice.
Yes. That's
center
a choice cut.
Yep. Chop.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
That's
where the flavor is.
Yeah. Loin well chop marbled. Of the wood. Yeah. Tell us you live in an agricultural state without saying you live in an agricultural state.
Yeah.
All right. So, no, it was pretty cool because it, and I totally agree. It's just, you see those boards where it's like, it's right next. You had it on top of a stack of some of the bur oak.
Yep.
And at first glance, it's not any different. And there's a, I think that, did we figure out that that was a walnut board that's over there too? That's rough sawn, or was that the
hickory? I'm pretty sure it is.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't know what that one is either. And then it's just amazing.
Now,
it's an amazing transformation.
Yeah, to be very clear, the air drying process does like stain and age the boards, right?
Right.
However, once I get my driveway moved and everything, and I move all my logs and stuff around, and I get everything drying on the north side of this building, my 5-year plan, hopefully this summer plan, but my plan is to get everything under roof. So hopefully it doesn't dry to that degree, or it's like I could still see the grain without running it through the planer.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because I think the walnut trees that everything's sitting under, I think that exponentially makes the dark staining worse.
Okay.
So
maybe.
Yeah. Because I've seen my stuff at Bobby Three Fingers' house, and he has his all drying for the most part under a shelter. And it doesn't age like this. So I think it's being under trees and not always covered. I try to cover it until we have a windstorm come through, and then my steel's in the neighbor's yard next door. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, stands to reason.
Yeah.
So. All right. I think that wraps up another episode of the Shop Notes podcast. Tune in next week where we'll continue on with our discussion here, especially about the oddball clamps that we were going to get to but just didn't do today. So special shout out to Tight Bond, who sponsors today's episode. If you don't want to use grandma's candles, you can also use diluted wood glue to seal your turning blanks and saw logs. So check them out. They have a wide variety of other glues in many different applications. I have two bottles here that are going to come with me on a family vacation for a special little craft project. So you want to check that out, tightbond.com. If you have any questions, comments, or smart remarks, you want to leave those on our show notes page, where you can watch the podcast on our YouTube channel, or send us an email, woodsmith@woodsmith.com. Click all the subscribing and liking and bells and whatever else you see there, and help us spread the word about the podcast. Thanks, everybody. Bye.